Isn't this a sports show?
You guys really enjoyed hosting the show without me last night, didn't you?
I mean, a couple people thought it was better.
I believe
my mom and dad were very happy.
Almost entirely.
I welcome you to think that I'm an idiot. That's great. You'll be correct.
This is Almost Entirely Sports without Joshua Briscoe.
What? What is going on?
Take the show with you by listening on the Sports Radio 810 mobile app at 810WHB.com or by searching for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts.
The two biggest detriments to me ever having like an actual radio career, I think, or I have three greatest detriments. Number one, I have a bad memory. Number two, I'm easily distracted. And number three, I'm not good at radio.
Also, he's not that likable.
I was going to say that next, actually. Yeah. I was going to say also, I'm not very likable.
You have a squeaky voice for radio.
Right, I do have a bad radio voice.
This is Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome in to another edition of Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Josh Briscoe tonight alongside Rudy Salazar. If you listened last Tuesday, you would have heard my voice, but we have an extra hour tonight on AES. And once again, we're going to mix in some sports, some things not so sports, as Josh would, of course, like us to do. Me and Rudy have been around each other a lot today, actually.
We have spent way more time today. I've spent more time with you today than I would normally spend with Josh in a day.
Yeah. Doing some physical labor, that's for sure. I'm still sore right now. My shoulder's feeling it right now as we start this show.
Physically, I'm feeling all right, surprisingly enough. Mentally, I'm exhausted.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Right now, though, when we look at the NFL, and everybody is feeling a little bit banged up. You're at that point in the season where you're feeling a little bit tired. Those injuries, they nag you a little bit. But one thing that has always been a consistent thing, at least in the last couple of weeks, has been this quarterback talk when it kind of ranges from one guy to the next. Right when Mahomes was struggling early on in the season, and by struggling, maybe not really himself. People called him broken, right? The national media outlets, it was Patrick Mahomes is broken. How can they fix it? And then the Chiefs started winning, but still that talk really didn't go away. It was this offense didn't really look the same. Why were the Chiefs not putting up 30-plus points anymore? Maybe it's because that's just football. You can't go up and put up 30 points a week every single time. But what was interesting to me so far this week, when you look at a guy like Lamar Jackson, who I think is a great quarterback, he goes out, has one of the worst games of his career against Cleveland, throws three interceptions in one quarter. I really haven't heard much from anybody out there thinking that Lamar Jackson is broken. Same thing with Josh Allen. When the Bills lost to the Jaguars, then got thumped by Indianapolis. It was never really that Josh Allen was broken. And I think that's the right move to say. I don't look at Lamar Jackson and think that he's broken because of a four interception performance. That's football. Good quarterbacks have bad games. It's just interesting to me that the scapegoat really was always Patrick Mahomes when the Chiefs were playing bad. The turnovers, that is. You know, his footwork was bad. He was taking too many shots. The league is figuring him out. I don't think that really was the case. I think sometimes you go through slumps. And in all honesty, it wasn't that bad of a slump. The Chiefs were losing to good football teams. Good football teams with star players. Right when you lose to the Chargers, I think Justin Herbert's a great quarterback. You lose to the Ravens. Like I said, Lamar Jackson, a great quarterback. Buffalo, they have Josh Allen. Tennessee, they had Derrick Henry. If the Chiefs were losing to lesser opponents week in, week out, and Mahomes was struggling, that's where I can kind of say, all right, something is wrong. But maybe it's when you play so well early on in your career, you've never really had any hiccups. People want to overreact. Don't get me wrong. I was one of the people when I was watching, and I'm like, why are these numbers not really improving? Why are they missing that big game where they put up 40-plus? They just dominate their opponent, both sides of the ball. And then they did that against Vegas. Then the next week, they only scored 19 against Dallas. At the end of the day, though, they're winning. I just want to know why nobody else really jumps on the other quarterbacks for playing poorly in a win. Because it was that way when the Chiefs beat the Giants. It was that way when the Chiefs beat the Cowboys. It was that way when the Chiefs beat the Packers. I mean, Rudy, why this week have we not seen that same criticism for Lamar Jackson throwing four interceptions and beating a banged-up Cleveland team that we saw when Mahomes was struggling weeks 3 through 7-ish?
Yeah, I think so much of that comes down to expectations, right? Like, when you build up what Mahomes and really just, you know, the whole Chiefs offense in general, what they had done, seeing the first time that he had ever really struggled, like we've seen Lamar struggle before, we've seen Baker struggle before, and it's something I've actually talked about this with Josh. It's weird how fast it happened. When you're really good, eventually people start to hate you. Like, that's just the natural progression. Happened to Tom Brady, happened to LeBron James. When you're elite, eventually you become hated. And it happened to Patrick Mahomes so fast nationally. Like, it's just, it happens within a year or two. Mahomes was now the enemy for 31 other franchises. And those fan bases, at first, you know, his first year as a starter, right? It's fun. You enjoy. You're just watching this guy sling the football all over the place. And by, like, the middle of his second year, people were just done. And so I think a lot of that comes, it's the expectations you set for yourself. Mahomes, and that being when Mahomes generally has struggled in the past, he's still better than all but like five or six quarterbacks in the NFL. And this year it was like, oh no, there are some games where he's actually playing bad. We've never seen this before. And also he's been dominating us for the last 3 years, so let's get him. Because it's a weird thing we do where the better you are, the greater you are, we just start to hate you eventually.
I like how you bring up that point, because one player in a different sport I've always compared Patrick Mahomes to is Steph Curry of the Golden State Warriors. Remember when he first broke into the league, the Warriors weren't what the Warriors were yet. And it was fun to watch a player his size be able to shoot the ball from 40 feet out, make it every single time. It was fun. Then the media gets a hold of that, and they show you on the highlight reel all the time. Your team gets better. Then you get surrounded by better players. Then before you blink, that team is the best team in their league. And Patrick Mahomes, I think it maybe took, five starts for the media to really take a hold of what he was doing. And then when you're losing those games to Patrick Mahomes, you get sick of it. So that's why I think, exactly to your point, when we haven't really seen Mahomes struggle, we never really saw it to this extent early on in the season, because even if he had a bad game, the Chiefs would win. And through his three-ish years as a starter, right, they never really went through stretches like that. They'd lose that early game, maybe, but then they'd rattle off six or seven in a row. There was never really a down period of Chiefs football with Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. But like I said earlier, it's the NFL. That's going to happen at one point in your career. It happened to Tom Brady. It happened to Peyton Manning. It's going to happen to the best of them. I just think that, when do the other players get the expectation? Is it MVP? Is it Super Bowl? I mean, Lamar Jackson won an MVP. And right now, he's got less passing yards than Taylor Heineke. He's got six more interceptions than Ben Roethlisberger. And he's only, you know, a little over 2,600 yards, 15 touchdowns, 12 picks. Now, he does rush the ball better than any quarterback in the league. Right? Him and Jalen Hurts are right up there with the best in the NFL. I still think Lamar Jackson is obviously far better than Jalen Hurts. But I feel like a guy like Lamar Jackson, for as exciting as he is, he should no longer be, I guess, protected from that type of criticism, because, listen, that was a bad game. Now, the Ravens won, but if Mahomes did that, it's completely a teardown situation that everybody's coming, why are the Chiefs broke? Why can't Patrick Mahomes get things going? That was three interceptions in one quarter, and they weren't on his receiver. Those were bad throws. I mean, when is it that the national media will be able to criticize Lamar like they do Mahomes?
Yeah, and we saw that a little bit with the Cowboys games. Obviously, Mahomes didn't throw for four picks, but the offense only scores 19 points, right? Like, that was a game that the Chiefs won, in large part because of their defense. The offense did enough to obviously outscore the Cowboys, but Chiefs won that game because of the defense. So you come out of that still talking, well, you know, the offense, like, they're still, like, that's the big story, right? Like, I would say that's probably the big story more nationally. I think here you started getting a lot more of, you know what, this defense is rounding into shape. Nationally, it's, well, the Chiefs offense, like, what's still wrong with it? And you know, again, I think so much comes down to, and Lamar's he's an elite quarterback, right? Like, he's insanely exceptional. But that gap between even him and Mahomes is still just, you know what I mean? Like, not to come off as super homer, but, like, Patrick Mahomes is something I've stood by. He will probably never go down as the greatest quarterback in NFL history, because winning seven Super Bowls is going to be hard. Like what Brady's doing is just completely absurd. Like, right, and Mahomes will always have the loss to Brady. I think you can make an argument that he's already the most talented quarterback to ever play in this league. Like, it's just the stuff he can do. And again, right, like, that's where I think it puts it on a different level, where we've seen Lamar struggle, right? We've seen, you know, we've seen Joe Burrow struggle. We've seen these other younger guys struggle. And up until this year, again, I remember Mahomes' first bad game. I use air quotes. It was against Jacksonville his first year, when he threw for like 250 yards. And I think he ran. I don't know. I can't remember if he threw for a touchdown.
I think
in that
he had
game.
Two picks, but didn't have a passing touchdown.
But he ran for a touchdown, and it was like, he wasn't good, but he was also still better than 50% of the league in that game. And that was like his first like bad game. And the Chiefs won that game very easily. I also remember that game. It was a downpour like I've never seen before, so it makes sense that it'd be a little hard to throw a football. But I think that's what it just comes down to, right? And also, it's just the fact that, like, Mahomes is, I mean, again, he's the story, right? It's same like any time Brady has ever struggled in his career, right? That's the story you hit on hard, because he's the superstar, and Mahomes is a superstar. Mahomes is, Baker gets this honestly a lot too, even. Honestly. You could throw Baker in this category, even though he's nowhere near as good as Mahomes. But when you watch TV, you see two quarterbacks an awful lot. You could say you can throw three and throw Aaron Rodgers in there, but you especially see Patrick Mahomes and Baker Mayfield all over the place. You don't see Lamar as much. You don't see some of these other guys as much. The guys who you see on TV, right, like the true superstars, like they're the stories. And so, it's a very easy – I don't want to use the word clickbait, because, you know, I just – like, I understand why you talk about Mahomes, because, again, he's the story. But you know what I mean? That's what they're doing. Talking about Mahomes brings much more national. You have more of a chance of bringing people in to either listen to you or read your story or watch you, whatever, you know, platform you're on, going with Patrick Mahomes and what is wrong with this super quarterback and the super team as compared to Lamar, who I think people have just always acknowledged, like, insanely talented, has his flaws, has his issues, especially in the passing game, right? Like, I think once you start seeing the running game, like, falling off, that's probably when he starts to get a little bit of that heat. It doesn't excuse anything, because four interceptions. Like, Lamar has had his bad passing games. I don't think he's a bad passer. Four interceptions is a whole different level than, like, a bad game. Like, that's an atrocious game.
And I think this isn't trying to be, like, a call for help. Like, criticize these quarterbacks just as much as Mahomes. I'm trying not to make it sound that way. I'm simply saying that if you are going to – because there are people out there that would take a Justin Herbert over Patrick Mahomes. I believe, was it Jimmy Johnson that said if he was to start a team now, he'd take Justin Herbert over Patrick Mahomes. Well, if that's the case.
And Herbert was the, totally understand why he was getting a lot of love before the season, even a month into the season, because Justin Herbert is exceptional. Josh Allen is exceptional. I've maybe never been more wrong about two players than I was about Justin Herbert and Josh Allen. Fully convinced those guys were just no good. They're great. But you're starting to see it now, even over the last month, right? It's just like that gap is still like anybody. Like, Herbert had an amazing start to the season. Josh Allen, obviously, last year had a great year, and he's had a good year this year too. Mahomes is still clearly the better quarterback of those guys. Like, he's Mahomes is going through something. He's still figuring stuff out, right? The league finally adjusted to them. They have to change the way they do things, and it's taken longer than I thought it would take. They're still kind of figuring that out, and I think some of that is just patience, right? Of like, Mahomes just kind of learning still of not tall. Like, right, like I don't always have to make the big play. I never want him to get away from that because that's what makes him special. But you're right, it's part of the process. And he's dude's still young. He's a grow. The guy is still learning as a quarterback. But, like, it's just that talent gap between him and everybody else is so, it's so much wider than I think, than anybody wants to admit it is.
Yeah, I think sometimes people are still scared to admit it because when he does look mortal, he seems closer to those quarterbacks. And that's when those national media outlets, those talking heads, they say, well, when Mahomes is struggling, I'm taking Lamar Jackson, or I'm taking Joe Burrow, or Justin Herbert, Josh Allen over Patrick Mahomes because I don't like his footwork. I don't like this and that. These guys are much more polished. But at the same time, it's like that talent gap. As you said, it's still...
It's more fun to say on national radio or TV, like, I'd take that Herbert over that Patrick Mahomes any day, right? Like, it's almost like, it's like if you had the choice of, like, you know, if you were like, you could have any basketball player for a season, you're like LeBron James, it's like, that's kind of a boring answer, you know? Because it's just, but it's the right answer. It's a boring answer. And that's what happens so often. So it's why you get like a... Colin Cowherd was out on Baker Mayfield because he wore his hat backwards, right? It's like, well, you don't have to like Baker Mayfield. There are plenty. You can find reasons for why you maybe don't think he's a franchise quarterback. The hat backward, that's just...
Like you said about Carson Wentz, too.
That people like to say, yeah.
I mean, Baker Mayfield, actually, when we're talking about these quarterbacks, he gets more hate than anybody.
Yes.
And he's... For no reason, really.
I think a lot of it is the TV thing, too, right? Like, the quarterbacks who you are just always seeing, even when you're not watching football, right? Just, like, you're just watching TV, commercial comes on, and you see Baker Mayfield in a Progressive commercial, which shouts to Progressive. They're between the Baker Mayfield and the Don't Turn Into Your Parents commercials. Progressive might have the best commercials on TV right now. Because Baker Mayfield, say what you want about Baker Mayfield as a quarterback. He is the best acting quarterback in the NFL by far. He's great in his commercials. I enjoy them because he feels natural. Like, Mahomes is pretty good at it. Baker's elite at it.
That's one of the reasons why I started liking him again, because I thought he was funny. I thought he's an easy guy to root for. But when you play for an organization like the Cleveland Browns, you're drafted number one overall. They give you the number one overall expectations. But, like, Baker Mayfield doesn't get the same treatment that Jared Goff gets. And I guess it's when you are, as you pointed out, in commercials. Jared Goff's not in commercials, or many of them. I'm sure he has been throughout his career.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a local L.A., Detroit, that type of stuff, but... You're not seeing Oakley, State Farm, Progressive. No. They're not coming through.
And, you know, the more popular you become, it's about what you do with that popularity. Now, I think Mahomes, at least from what we've seen, he can come off confident. I wouldn't say cocky by any means, and sometimes that's what leads people to dislike a player. He's really just popular, and the media shows him a lot. Therefore, he gets that hate, and people want to see him collapse. They want to see the Chiefs play poorly. And that's why I look at the rest of these teams with these quarterbacks, right? If the Ravens lost on Sunday night, I wouldn't have been, like, floored. Same thing with, like, Buffalo. Buffalo is probably the one team in the AFC, excluding the Chiefs, where if they lose, I'm like, wow, something definitely went wrong there. The Chiefs, by far and away, though, when they lose a game, it is a big deal around the league. I don't think you can say that for many other teams in the AFC, because the Chargers... They've lost to Minnesota, to New England. I mean, they've dropped a few games that they should have won. Home games as well. Baltimore, they got, you know, blasted by Cincinnati. You know, if that happens in Kansas City, everybody loses their minds.
The Chiefs' slow start was the biggest story in the NFL. Like hands down, it was the thing that got talked about the most because it was the most jarring, surprising thing that had happened.
And now the fear for everybody else is they're coming off the bye week. They're 7-4, alone in first place of the AFC West, which didn't seem attainable when they were 3-4 or 2-4, whatever it was, after they lost to Tennessee. The Chargers were looking good. They had an easier schedule. Justin Herbert was playing well. And then it all just collapsed. And I think that's right now, last point of these quarterbacks, when you look at Lamar Jackson, you look at Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, they're not used to that yet where everybody's gunning for you. Mahomes, since 2018, has gotten every team's best shot because they know that they can't slip up many times if they're going to catch Kansas City. The Chargers did, the Raiders did, the Broncos did. They all slipped up in the AFC West, allowed Kansas City to gain ground. Baltimore, on the other hand, they got their win earlier this year, but we're not looking very good in that first game. It's a whole different story, a whole different narrative of this season if Baltimore loses to Kansas City, because Lamar Jackson goes to 0-4 against Mahomes. If Josh Allen loses to Kansas City, you know, he's still winless. And I know it's all what-ifs. I mean, this you can't go back on that.
This was the revenge tour to start the year off, right? It was all these quarterbacks. Because, again, it is different, I think, especially this year. Like, the Chiefs have obviously had, like, they played last year, obviously, with the target on the back because they just won the Super Bowl. But I think especially this year where it's three straight AFC title games, it's two straight Super Bowls, it felt like this year especially it was everybody early on. And part of that is like the Chiefs' schedule start of the year was insanely difficult. Like we talked about this, I remember, on AES before the year started, that by like week seven, we're going to know kind of what the AFC playoff picture is because all these teams are kind of playing each other early. Now, the reality is we don't really know because so many teams now have lost, right? Like Tennessee has now lost to both the Jets and the Texans, right? Like everybody, like the Bills have struggled, like teams, games that we thought, you know, the Bills would easily win and the Chiefs would easily win and the Chargers and the Ravens would easily win. They've all lost. So that has now made this a much closer, like, you know, we still don't know, even though in theory we thought we would know kind of like who was on the front, you know, who had the, the lead, you know, and everything. But this really was the revenge year. It was everybody finally getting their shot of Mahomes. It's different when you're the team gunning for, you know, when you're trying to take down the big team. And then when you finally become that, like when the Bills beat the Chiefs, the Bills were now the big dogs in the NFL. Like then all of a sudden the Bills were the team in the AFC. When the Titans beat the Chiefs, now all of a sudden they became the big team in the AFC. They were the team. It's hard handling. Now the Titans have had massive injuries. And so I don't want to say they've crumbled to pressure as much as they've just, going into their game last week, Mike Vrabel had more career touchdown catches than the entire wide receiver room did. Their head coach, who played in the NFL for a long time but was a linebacker, they get a bit of a pass due to injuries. Also, you shouldn't lose to the Texans. You know, like
I agree with that. I mean, there's no excuse
for that.
it's just so telling, though, that when you're getting those best shots from every single team, it kind of still shows that you're the top dog, right? Because Josh Allen needed that win. Lamar Jackson needed that win. Tennessee needed that win because you need to prove that you can take down the defending Super Bowl champion. But that's also why when you look back at a regular season, it's such a marathon. It's not a sprint. You cannot crown a champion for a week two or week three win in September. It's just not possible to do because teams get better. Teams like Kansas City with that much talent, you know, maybe sometimes you look at your point differential, you go, they're going to get better, right? Compare it to Major League Baseball, a much longer season, but the Royals were the best team in baseball in May. Everybody kind of knew, okay, that's going to even out a little bit.
At some point, they are not going to be leading the division. That's probably not going to last.
There's no miracles like that. There was never going to be a miracle for other teams that the Chiefs were going to somehow lose 11 or 12 games. And I know that's the initial panic when it's happening. You haven't seen it in a long time, a team with that much talent losing games. But when Kansas City bounced back, everybody's sort of gotten more quiet. No, I think the last couple criticisms there's been have been that they haven't played teams at full strength. I get it. You didn't play Aaron Rodgers. You played Dallas without Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb. Both those games were close. This is the NFL, though. Every team deals with injuries. You can't send sympathy cards to teams that lost because they had injuries because everybody's dealt with it. Do you think Tampa Bay, when they beat Kansas City in the Super Bowl, sent the Chiefs a sympathy card for not having their offensive line? No, because the fact of the matter was they didn't have a healthy offensive line, and the Buccaneers exposed that. So Kansas City right now, after all that turmoil in the first half of their season, now can really set it up in the back half of the season to run away with the AFC West and set themselves up nicely for maybe a shot at the one seed. I mean, I have asked
it's
this before.
Play.
What do you give, I guess, percentage-wise chance, before we go to break, of Kansas City grabbing the one seed? I mean, everybody is so inconsistent. And right now, Kansas City is two wins away from six in a row. And then you're heading into that Chargers game at 9-4.
Yeah, I think I'm probably still, I'm probably in the 40-50% range. Like, I wouldn't put them as the favorite. And some of that is just more of There's still a handful of teams. They, by losing to the Bills and the Titans and the Ravens, you put yourself in a pretty, you know, right where you cannot tie with any of those teams. You have to finish the game better because they have the tiebreaker. It's a lot of teams to finish with a full game better than. So I still put it probably at like just like a 40 to 50% where they're not the favorite. But I don't love any team really to finish that one seed, right? Like again, Tennessee now with their injuries, I don't know if they can keep it going. I don't really know if I believe in the Patriots yet. Like they keep winning, but they're also not like Tennessee was the best team they played, but that was a banged up Tennessee team. But also Mac Jones is just he's doing what he's being asked to do, and he's doing it very well. So I don't know if I fully I don't know just how quite how good they are yet. The Chargers are super talented, but for whatever reason, just are the Chargers still. Move to a different town, and you still just do the same old Charger thing.
Chargering.
And, you know, and obviously, like, you know, especially with the Patriots, and this will, like, the Bills and the Patriots will kind of, I guess, will settle themselves, like, which one of those two teams are really going to compete for the one seed, considering they still haven't played yet. Obviously, they might split, but you may see the Bills or the Patriots sweep the other one, and that will just completely knock that team out. So I would say I probably still lean, you know, maybe around 40%, I would say. That feels probably about right. It very much in play. Certainly not the favorite to do it, though.
Yeah, I don't want to be too optimistic and say this is a 80, 90% chance because that's just not the reality of it. I'm not going to sit here right now and say undefeated because I think the only way they get the one seed locked in, they got to win out. You win out, you're 13-4, probably going to get the one seed because other teams, the Patriots, the Bills, they're going to lose those games to each other. Maybe they split or something like that. The Ravens, they're so banged up in the backfield as well. They haven't looked great, so they're probably going to have a tough stretch. So I'm with you there. I do think it's probably 30 to 40% chance they get the one seed. But as I've said with the AFC, you get in the playoffs, I think it's anybody's game. There is no clear favorite this year in the conference. When we come back here on Almost Entirely Sports, we'll be talking some KU hoops with Sam Lance of Fog.net. You're listening to AES on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Steve McCarluke?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back in to Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Josh Briscoe tonight alongside Rudy Salazar. We are now joined by Sam Lance of Fog.net over at 24/7 Sports. We're going to be talking some KU hoops. Sam, thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks for having me, Jack.
So the Jayhawks, they played all right in their tournament down in Orlando. They, of course, had that dramatic loss to Dayton, but they bounced back. They beat Iona 96-83. Now, I did hear that Bill Self wasn't too happy with this team's defensive performance and how they've looked early on. I mean, what did you get from that press conference on how unhappy he was with the defensive performance?
Yeah, so after the game, Self took a while to get to his post-game radio interview that he does with Greg Gurley. And whenever he got to that interview, he was pretty candid about how he felt about the defense. You know, he said that it may be the worst defensive team that he's had in his time here at Kansas. So he was definitely really unhappy with their effort on defense. And they allowed 52 points in one half to an Iona squad, and five of their players ended up in double figures. So he was not too happy with that performance.
I guess when you look at this team, Sam, there's a lot of athletic guys, especially in that starting lineup. I think Remy Martin is fast, athletic. He may not be the biggest guy, but he would be somebody I would think would be a good defender. Ochai Agbaji, long, athletic. Christian Brown, long, athletic. David McCormick, 6'10", and is filled out at 250, 260. I mean, this is a team, even off the bench, you got a lot of depth. They should be better defensively. Why doesn't it look that way through six games?
Now, right now, I think they're just trying to get used to all playing with each other. You know, if you add in new pieces, it's going to take some time to get that chemistry. And, you know, Self likes to switch five, and that can be hard to grasp for some people. I mean, Remy Martin at times, let's be honest, he's looked like kind of a liability on the defensive end. Dayton, and in that game, they were isolating him a lot, trying to get easy buckets off of him. But I really think the more this team works on it in practice, the more they get accustomed to how Self wants them to play, and frankly, the more effort they give, they can get the defensive side of the ball turned around a little bit.
We're talking with Sam Lance of Fog.net. I know the big story right now is David McCormick. He didn't start well last year. He's certainly not starting well this year. I guess when should fans expect for a change of play from the Kansas big man?
Well, that's kind of a tough question to answer. I'm not really sure on when, but I think right now Self is just trying to get him easy baskets, help McCormick get his confidence back up. And against Iona, he had somewhat of a bounce-back game. He was 4 of 6 from the field with 13 points, 5 rebounds, but I mean, he could have had a lot more. There are some easy baskets that he missed underneath the rim. There are some rebounds that he let slip right through his fingers. I think, you know, if Kansas is going to be that team that they want to be, which is competing for a national championship this season, David McCormick's play is certainly going to have to get better. I think it's just a matter of time before he figures it out.
I think it is still too early to make the judgment on maybe starting lineup changes. Now, I know Jalen Wilson's coming off the bench. He was a starter last year. You know, DeJuan Harris hasn't looked like the same point guard early on, but still, they're not going to make a change that early. When could maybe we expect a little bit of a shuffle around in the starting lineup? Because Jalen Wilson needs to get back up to speed. He still could be a starter on this team, and David McCormick not playing well. DeJuan Harris not really playing the best, but you got guys like Jordan Yusufu or Yesufu off the bench, you know, a couple of freshmen here and there. I mean, are we going to see any changes with this starting lineup, or is this going to be the same starting five we see all year?
I think a change could definitely be made. You know, Jalen Wilson itself has come out and said that he is a starter. He might not be starting right now, but he is viewed as a starter on this team. So that would leave, you know, an odd man out in the starting lineup. Not really sure who that would be at this moment, but definitely could see some lineup changes coming up.
And I know they have a good amount of freshmen, as I just pointed out, on the bench, but Zach Clements has sort of had an odd role, I feel like, in these games. You know, he's 6'10", he can stretch the floor, he can shoot it from outside, but sometimes we saw, I mean, the Michigan State game, I thought he played a good amount of minutes, and then sometimes we don't even see him for longer than 6 minutes in a game. What is he doing right on the floor right now to stay in the game, and maybe what is he not doing so well on the floor to keep him on the bench?
Obviously, something that he's been doing right is shooting the ball well. I mean, he's 5 of 9 from the three-point line this season, good for 55%. He's 8 of 16 from the floor. So there's no question he's has offensive talent, offensive ability at this level. But really, I think it comes back to the defensive side of the ball for him. Can he guard in those ball screen situations? Can he be a good hedge man? Can he be an effective shot blocker and rebounder? I think if those things kind of shore themselves up, then we can see more Zach Clements on the floor.
We're talking with Sam Lance of Fog.net. They do have a game this Friday on the road, first true road game at St. John's. Have you had the opportunity to look at maybe some of the film of St. John's, or are you still waiting a few more days till you look at that film?
I planned on looking at some film tomorrow. We have the self-presser tomorrow to preview St. John's. I haven't really gotten a chance to look at their squad, but last year they played them. I'm pretty sure Christian Braun had a really big game that game. But yeah, I'm not too sure much about St. John's.
That's all right that you may not know the most about them right now. But one thing I think with a road game, we saw how the game changed so drastically against Dayton with that crowd. I thought Dayton's crowd really took over that game. We talked with Jesse Newell on the program on Friday, and he mentioned that they were a huge factor. Can you see this KU team handling an environment like that, their first true road game, or do you see maybe a team that's going to struggle early on against St. John's?
I think this KU team could certainly handle a true road game, and I think that's part of the reason why self-scheduled it is to get an atmosphere like that under Kansas's belt. But yeah, I definitely think that they will be able to compete well on the road against St. John's.
And one guy we talked about a little bit earlier was Jordan Yesufu, the transfer from, or Joseph Yesufu. I keep messing up that name. I apologize to him. But I thought he looked fantastic on Sunday. I thought it was his best game as a Jayhawk. Do you think we're going to see him a little bit more? I think he's so athletic. He's got a good shot. Or maybe is he still working his way back into some kind of role?
Yeah, Self actually said not too long ago on Hawk Talk that he foresees Yesufu playing a bigger role as the season goes on. I mean, with him, he's just, you know, he's fast. He's really athletic. He's a hard-nosed defender, which is something that Self has been looking for. And then you saw against Iona that he can be impactful on the offensive end as well. He can get his own and make really tough shots. So I definitely see a more defined role for Yesufu coming up. But I mean, Self is still trying to figure out how all these guys on the bench kind of work together and work with the starters.
Sam, one last question for you about this Big 12 conference. You know, Baylor's undefeated. We know Baylor's is good and they're going to be good. But two undefeated teams right now, Iowa State and Texas Tech. I guess for Kansas fans out there, how serious or how legit are these teams like Iowa State and Texas Tech who are unblemished, a perfect 6-0?
I think both Iowa State and Texas Tech are quality teams. I think both could, you know, possibly see themselves inside of the top 25 of the AP poll at times this season. And don't forget about Tristan Inaruna, former Kansas player last year. He's in the starting lineup for Iowa State, game in and game out, and he's been making quite the impact over there. But yeah, those are two quality teams in the Big 12, and the Big 12, once again this year, looks to be as one of the best conferences in all the nation.
All right, Sam. Well, thanks so much for your time, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thank you, Jack, for having me on.
That was Sam Lance, beat writer for KU basketball and football over at fog.net. That's 24/7 sports. When we come back here on Almost Entirely Sports, we'll get into this Barstool Christmas movie list that I saw. I think it'll be a fun segment, but I believe it is actually kind of controversial. And we'll get into that right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
All right, really quick, I got to go to a break here, but hold on. Alvin and the Chipmunks, the Squeakquel. How do you spell Squeakquel?
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, filling in for Josh tonight alongside Rudy Salazar. Yeah, surprise, surprise. Once again, not Josh. It will be my voice tonight, so if you're disappointed, can't do much about it. But tomorrow is December. Therefore, I guess you can go full out into listening to Christmas music, watching Christmas movies. Maybe you are somebody that waits till after Thanksgiving. Maybe you're already decorating before Thanksgiving. But a list I found very interesting today on Twitter. Barstool Sports tweeted it out. It was top 10 Christmas movies of all time. So before I get to this list, Rudy, I got to know what is your favorite Christmas movie, and I'll see if it's on this list.
Oh, boy. I think my favorite Christmas movie will be probably Spider-Man No Way Home.
I can live with that. I can live with that because I'll be doing the same thing.
Man, but what would be my current favorite? Maybe it's probably either Home Alone or Christmas Vacation. I don't know if I'm a huge, like, I take it back. I was about to say I'm not a huge Christmas movie. Probably, like, growing up especially, Rudolph, and the Island Misfit Toys.
The Claymation.
Yeah, that movie was a classic. I've watched that movie 1,000 times, so I'll roll with that.
Okay, well, two of those three are on this list. So, number 10, I'm going to go from number 10 and lead it up into number 1. So, number 10, they have Bad Santa.
It's a solid movie.
It's a solid movie, but not a family movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed it I don't know if it's a movie that if I watched now, I would necessarily find all that funny. But it's like the first time, it feels like a movie the first time or two you watch, it's very funny. You get over the jokes pretty quickly. But I did laugh a lot the first time I saw it. I do remember that.
I would definitely say first time, yeah, it was funny, but you can't be watching that two or three times. You definitely can't be watching it with your parents or your relatives. Number 9, they have Home Alone 2. Now, I am a Home Alone fan, but I still get spotty on what happens in all the Home Alones, because there's three, right?
Yes. I think 2 is that when he's in New York City, I want to say?
I believe so. I think it is
I feel like I saw two once, but that was it. I've seen the first one.
That's when I remember the most, obviously.
I remember that one. I was like, I could almost just play the movie in my head. I don't remember the second one that much.
I'm right there with you. I don't remember two that much. I also don't remember three that much. Three is a little bit higher, but at number eight, they have Miracle on 34th Street. I can't say much on this because I've never seen the movie.
I assume I have it when I was at a young age. Like, I feel like I probably did in school once.
It's a 1947 film, and then also again in 1974, is that?
It feels like a movie they would have made me watch in school.
That feels a lot more accurate. Black
so
and white
I'm sure
film.
I have seen it, but I don't remember a thing about it.
No, I
other than it takes place, most of the show does take place like outside on a street, like in a neighbor, like it's that street.
I think that would
street.
Make that, that miracle happen
remember,
there as well.
I remember
so
that.
That's why they have to have it at number eight. I wouldn't put it that high, but I guess my opinion might not matter as much because I haven't seen it. I maybe have to do it this Christmas. Number seven, they got The Christmas Story. I think The Christmas Story might be a little bit too low.
Here. I mean, yeah, it's I'm not. I don't know if I'm a huge fan necessarily of it, but I mean, like, it is the. I mean, it is the Christmas movie. It's the what is it? Christmas Eve or Christmas Day? Where it's just it's TBS or TNT, one of the two, just plays it for 24 straight hours. It's like just on repeat. That movie's on all day.
I have watched it a ton, and it has been a while though since I've seen it. I just feel like by popular opinion, it would probably be in the top five. I would say
it might be a movie that because it's on so much, like some people just almost got like they've just seen it too
got
many
sick of it.
Times. Yeah,
it's like the Patrick Mahomes effect.
Yep.
You
see
him
too much, you get
you
a little
to hate
tired
it.
Of it.
Number six, we'll skip over this one a little bit because we already touched on it. Home Alone 3. So
I don't
three
Home
Alone films
all.
Are all on top. I don't remember it all.
If
either.
You, if I would have just guessed too that Home Alone 3 was a bad movie, just because usually the last movie of a, I mean,
yeah, how many times you gonna be left home alone?
Yeah, a lot of times the sequel of comedies aren't good, but the third is never good.
I actually don't know. Was Macaulay Culkin even in Home Alone 3? That, or was it a different?
If you told me it was somebody different, I'd believe you.
I'm gonna look that up right now. But number five, this is my most controversial take. I don't agree with this one at all. Elf is five. There's no way Elf can be five. I think Elf has to be top three.
Elf is really good.
It's still funny to this day. I watched it like 2 days ago, and the humor still holds up. It's good for kids. It's good for parents. It's good for people our age, right? I still think with Will Ferrell, when humor can hold up like that, it has to be top three. Like, yeah. I've watched it 40, 45 times, maybe 50. It's like the number one Christmas movie for me, and I don't know why. It would only be put at number five.
It's definitely the Christmas movie of our generation. Like if you're in that, like, I would say, like, mid-20s. How old are you, Jack? Probably mid-20s-ish?
22.
Okay, a little young. I would say, though, probably anywhere from, like, that 20 to 35 range. Like, you would... Elf is probably your Christmas movie, right? Like,
yeah, I would say that.
It is one of the classics.
Okay, so back to Home Alone 3 real quick. Alex Pruitt, I guess, he's the kid in it. Alex DeLynn, so it wasn't Macaulay Culkin, so I don't really know how that could be a favorite when it's not even Macaulay Culkin anymore.
Apparently Scarlett Johansson.
I saw that
movie,
as well.
That threw me off.
I've literally never seen... I feel like I've seen it, but maybe I haven't seen it. I'm not quite sure, but when Macaulay Culkin's not in it, I don't know how I can remember it. Number four, they got Christmas Vacation. That's another classic. I would put that in the top three. I think that's still a little bit too low. Fred Claus with Vince Vaughn and Paul Giamatti, that is
forgot
up there as well.
About that movie.
That movie is fantastic, and I'm glad they put it up this high, because I don't agree with number one on this list. Number two, you got Home Alone. I can give Home Alone top five status for sure. Well, before we go to break, though, because we got like 3 minutes before we go to break, I do want to debate this last one, because I have seen this movie. I think there's a good message, but it's A Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Number one,
it's kind of boring.
It is kind of boring. Like, I think it's a great movie overall in terms of directing it, the acting in it, but I always thought it was just kind of more of a lesson. It wasn't really like a fun, joyful Christmas movie. It was kind of sad.
Also, I remembered just going through there the Tim Allen Christmas where he becomes Santa Claus.
Oh, Santa Claus! Yeah, yeah, like Santa Claus 1, 2, and 3.
Those are classics. Like, Those were ones especially because when they came out, I was in like I was probably in fifth, sixth grade, something like that, maybe seventh or you know around that time. And so it was just we always watched those in school. Like those were my favorite days every year on Christmas. I knew we were gonna get. I was gonna get Tim Allen as Santa Claus. I was gonna be happy.
Yeah, none of those Santa Claus movies were in the top 10.
So good movies.
I also think, though, a couple that should have gotten some recognition. Have you ever seen Four Christmases with Vince Vaughn, Reese Witherspoon?
I don't know if I've seen that one.
That one you definitely should check out. I've watched that one, I think, the last couple of years. And then also Office Christmas Party.
Yeah, it's a solid one.
Again, I don't think it's really good to watch with kids or anything like that. But it's good to like watch by yourself if you are just wanting to watch a Christmas movie on your own. I also think with this list, I mean, I don't know who got it. It had to be somebody that was a little bit older. I mean, you got It's a Wonderful Life and you got Miracle on 34th Street in there.
Yeah, somebody who either I would say is tends to lean a little bit older or whose parents just made them watch all the oldest movies growing up.
Exactly. You got number 10, Bad Santa, 9, Home Alone 2, 8, Miracle on 34th Street, 7, A Christmas Story, 6, Home Alone 3, 5, Elf, 4, Christmas Vacation, 3, Fred Claus, 2, Home Alone, and number 1, It's a Wonderful Life. I mean, I guess everybody has a right to their own opinion. When we come back here on Almost Entirely Sports, we'll be talking the latest K-State basketball news with Ryan Gilbert of GoPowerCat.com. You're listening to AES on Sports Radio 810 WHB.